Socrates warned us to beware the barrenness of a busy life. I understand that all too well these days. If you are like me, you are busy doing the many things you have to do, plus your athletic longevity efforts to live long strong, including getting good sleep every night, eating a good diet with enough of this and not too much of that, getting enough high and low intensity exercise, that the days just flash on by. Time is flying by, which is exactly the opposite of what I want. The missing ingredient, I think, is marking time with powerful memories. And for me, powerful memories come of adventures that provide experiences that had such powerful emotions that my brain stored those memories very securely and accessibly. These are the experiences that mark time and give my life a sense of fullness. Anyway, this idea is why I invited Brian Keene to the show. You probably know Brian. He is famous for his epic adventures in the Sahara Desert and the Arctic Circle and more. In our chat, we discuss how to pick adventures and how to up your game to prepare for adventures while accomplishing your health and fitness goals for life. I have to say that Brian is amazing, and my conversation with Brian has had a big impact on my thinking. My mind is now focused on returning to my roots as an adventurer. I hope my chat with Brian has a powerful effect on you too. And here's a test. Who said life is either a daring adventure or nothing at all? All right, let's talk to Brian Keene. Brian Keene, welcome to the Wise Athletes Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm really excited for this chat.
Awesome. I've been doing this podcast for maybe I'm in the fourth year. Before I was in cycling, race cycling, on the track, crits. And before that, I was doing these long, 120-mile rides over mountain passes and stuff like that. But before that, I was a mountaineer and a rock climber, skier. I lived in Colorado, and every weekend was an adventure for me. Plus, I did long trips. I went and climbed in Bolivia and Ecuador. I did, the Matterhorn. I went to Wales. I've done a lot of different things. And I've even had people say, wow, you've done a lot in your life. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? But it's over. I'm not doing it anymore. Why not? Why aren't I doing it anymore? I'm so focused on my training and my diet and getting good sleep every night and trying to extend my longevity and health span, blah, 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 that I don't have time to enjoy my life. And I know that you are a guy who has done some amazing things. I'm not on here trying to tell people that they need to run 6 marathons back to back in the Sahara Desert or their life sucks, because adventure is in the eye of the beholder. But, as a fitness guy and as an adventure guy, you are a guy who can help in me and my audience, who I hope are interested in this idea as well, because marking time with powerful memories is a way to have a full life. And if you can combine your fitness goals, your health goals, with this idea of having a full life, well, that seems like a win. I mean, I look back on all of the great workouts I've had in the last, 3 or 5 years that have gotten me in some of the best shape of my life. I mean, look in the mirror, I look better than I maybe ever have. I have no memories of any of it. I don't remember one of those great workouts. They mean nothing to me. How can I work all this together? Anyway, that's what I want to talk about today.
I love that. I think, and that's my wheelhouse, because I'm all about, yes, have the hard workouts, get into great shape, be happy with what you see in the mirror. But ultimately, your body's a vehicle for expression. And if you're not doing things and creating memories and experiences, it feels like it's all for naught. So you want to be able to merge those two things together. And what I do on my channels and on my content and how I talk with people, whether it's professionally with clients or people that are following on social, is merging it all together. So having your workouts at home or your gym-based sessions or your long bike rides or your runs, working towards something that's going to create a memory or create an experience. And I did exactly as you did. I was a competitive athlete for the early part of my life. I went into competitive bodybuilding later in my life, in my 20s, and I was in fitness modeling, and I was one of those like ab selfie wanker people that would literally be like on the cover of magazines and putting up all my different photos of different angles. But I did that in my 20s, but it was kind of very hollow, similar to you. Like, you look in the mirror and go, yeah, I've crushed the last 3 years of workouts, but I have done nothing really, and I have no memories, no experiences of this. And then in 2018, I took a little bit of a shift and a turn, and my start of that was Marathon des Sables that you mentioned there, the 6 back-to-back marathon, self-sufficient through the Sahara Desert. And that was my first, I won't say toe dip into that world, because it was more like a full body immersion than a toe dip, because it was really extreme. But it was incredible. I remember at one point on day 5 of the Sahara, where, so the way they do it is one of those marathons is sandwiched back to back. So you've got 48 hours to complete 2 of them, but you can't stop. So you just have to keep going through. So if you run really quickly and you keep going for 20 hours, you'll complete what would be the equivalent of 2 marathons. And then you get a little bit of a rest before the final one on the last day. And it's like being on Mars. There's nobody around. You're in the middle of nowhere. It's just sand. It's just the stars. And you're looking going, oh my God, where would I ever get to experience this? And I've had similar experiences since, because the year after I did the Arctic, I ran 230 kilometers through the Arctic in the north of Sweden. That was
crazy.
That was definitely the most difficult thing I've ever done in my life. It was because of the temperature and the difficulty of the environment itself. So in the Sahara, as difficult as it is, and it gets very, very hot, at least there's a bit of respite. There's parts where there's shade, there's different styles of trees you can get under. You can take a break and you could slow down. You can't do that in the Arctic, because the Arctic has this, what I call a weird Goldilocks zone, where if you go too fast, your risk of hypothermia goes up because you're sweating. And if you go too slow, your risk of frostbite goes up because you're not hot enough, or your core temperature isn't hot enough. So you need to be in this weird Goldilocks zone where you're moving at a decent pace throughout the entire time. And like, I, at one point, because in the Arctic, and we can come back, and I've gone very long-winded into this, but it'll give a little bit of context for people that want to add more adventure into their life, that I tore my Achilles 86 kilometers from the end of that race. And like, I finished it, I strapped it up, like literally till I lost feeling below my ankle, and I just pulled it behind me and got there, crossed the Arctic Circle line. But because I was moving so slowly, I have a picture that went viral on social media and all over the national press and papers in Ireland and the UK, because I didn't realize how much water is in your eyes. So when the core temperature drops and you're not able to move fast enough in the Arctic, your eyelids will freeze over. Your eyes will start to freeze over. So I wasn't able to blink. Wow. So they went as red. For those who are listening, we have a recording symbol here that says we're recording, and it's bright red. My eyes went that color because I wasn't able to blink.
Oh.
And I had to go into a tent with the local indigenous Sami reindeer tribe, and they had to get like boiling water and sprinkle it over my eyelids to try and get the eyes to blink. And then, because they were frozen over, because I'd been moving so slow, because my Achilles tore before I was able to get into one of the tents, and I dragged it behind me for 6K. And yeah, it was an amazing experience. Like, I was drinking reindeer broth, trying to get my core temperature back up with this Achilles strapped so tight I couldn't feel it, and my ankle, everything below it was just numb. And got to the end, finished it, got to see the Arctic Circle line in minus 38 degree temperature. Just an incredible experience. So I've been very fortunate with having survived, having came through some of these challenges. You know, I've done 100 mile ultra marathons. I'm flying out to Tanzania a week on Monday to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, one of the 7 summits. So I've been very lucky. And then everything I do, and what I recommend for people who are similar to me, who want to have that balance of adventure, but also be physically fit enough that you have the confidence to do it, is you make your life fit into that. Your workout schedule, your nutrition, your sleep, your stress management, and all of these things feed into an adventure-based lifestyle, particularly as you become older. Again, I'm coming into my late 30s now. It's different to what it was a decade ago. It'll be different in another decade again, but I want to be doing this for the next 20, 30, 40 years. So it's setting the groundwork now so that I'm able to do it.
Well, awesome. Yeah, so that's good background for people who are interested in this idea and can understand better what you can share. So, in your late 30s, you're a young man. You might not think you're a young man because...
No, I do. I do. I still think I'm a very young man. I am.
Those are vague memories. Anyway, the audience here is the older athlete. So there could be some people, I'd say, you know, just coming from the cycling world, 40 plus would be sort of the older athlete. You know, for me, when I was 40 years old, I remember my 40th birthday. I did 5 14ers, Colorado 14,000 foot peaks in a weekend with my buddy. I was in the best shape of my life at 40 years old. So 40 years, not old. But, you know, you get into your 60s and now you can feel it. Something is definitely different. And it's not because I've been sitting on the couch or, you know, eating candy or, you know, whatever. It's just what happens. And you can fight it and you should fight it. But still, things are happening that you don't want. And so you're trying to fight it off as well as you can. And I'm doing a good job of it. And I think that I've had enough experts on the podcast. I think we're up to... We're in almost 150 episodes. We've given lots of good advice, and I've taken almost all the good advice. I don't think I've ever had anybody on to talk about, you know, how to feel satisfied with the time spent, the creating. We're talking about memories, right? This sense of time goes by. You know, I think back, the last few years have gone by in a blink. You know, I just said I could remember my 40th birthday. Well, that feels a little while ago. It doesn't feel like my 20th birthday. But if I think back 5 years, it's like I can't think of hardly anything that happened in the last 5 years. So it's sort of a well-known phenomenon that the older you get, the faster time goes by, it seems. And some of it, I think, is just that there's just a lack of powerful emotions to mark the time. And so we really need to find a way to put these powerful emotions into our timeline, and let's do it in a way that we think back and they're great. Maybe they were scary, or it was I tried so hard, I thought I would die, or, you know, whatever, but you didn't die. You know, you didn't like get crippled for life. You ended up overcoming these things. And so figuring out how hard of a thing to try to set up, that, you know, there's some skill in that and good advice. And then also, and this is another thing I want to talk to you about is, well, how do you up your game? 10 years ago, if somebody had said, hey, we're going to Kilimanjaro next week, we've been training for 2 years, but we got an empty spot, you want to come with us? I'd be like, I'm there. And I go and I do it. There's no way I wouldn't be able to do it. But if you said, hey, Joe, there's a spot and we're going to fly out tomorrow. Can you join us? I'd be like, there's no way I could do it. I mean, I'm not sure I could hike for 10 hours. You know, I don't know how long Kilimanjaro is, but it's got to be 2 weeks of effort. So there's just like no way. No matter how I look in the mirror, I'm just not as fit as I used to be. So, you know, I need these goals to give me something to work toward. And I can take a year to get myself ready, but it's going to be a step up. So how do I do that? Now, I'm talking about the older athlete here. So how do I step up in a way where I don't injure myself? I don't tear my Achilles. You know, I don't get an overuse thing where, you know, I'm strained a tendon and now I'm continuing to train over it. And now it's painful all the time. You know, all of those things. So, you know, we ought to talk about, you know, how can people set these kinds of goals to give them a fullness in their life, in their memories, that also a goal for pushing them to get fitter over time, but also how to train so that they don't injure themselves. And now, you know, I just tore my Achilles, I can't go on this trip, right? You know, all for nothing.
I love that question, Joe. And I'm in a good position to answer it because the one-to-one clients that I work with, I tend to work with a lot of older athletes, and in a similar position, they're people who have a history of either playing sport or running or cycling or swimming, some endurance base, and now they're in their mid-50s, early 60s, and their body doesn't respond the same way. And what's important to understand is your starting point and your history do play a role in the approach you take currently and going forward. So if you have an individual who's been sedentary their whole life and they're in their early 60s and now they want to start climbing mountains and hiking, you're going to have to really approach with baby steps, very small changes, very incremental progress, because that individual doesn't have a baseline or muscle memory of having ever done that. The likes of you, Joe, and those that are listening, the wise athletes, they're going to have a decent base. The approach will be similar, meaning you can't build something up too soon. So an Achilles going, for example, Achilles tendon particularly tends to be an overuse speed issue, that you've done too much in too short of a time period and then it goes. Achilles is a very, very easy example. Your whole body is an example of that, but an Achilles is one that tends to be very frequent with people, because if you start to walk, hike, run at any age, but particularly 40 plus, your risk of injury goes higher if you start to do too much too soon. So if you're in your 60s or mid 50s and beyond, you're going to gradually build up slowly. But where you have an advantage over an individual who's been sedentary their whole life is your speed at which you build up will be faster, because your baseline is better. You have a history, your aerobic capacity, your lung function, your heart, which is going to obviously decrease as you get older. There's no way around that, but it's still going to be higher than somebody who hasn't got that same base. So there's a pro and a baseline benefit to having a history as an athlete in whatever capacity that is. I just want to frame that on the front end. After that, you're looking at areas that are going to lead to gradual improvements, but across the board. So nutrition is a big focus. Although training is such a physical thing, climbing Kilimanjaro, hiking, long cycles, long walks, power walking, runs, they're endurance based, they're physical. Your nutrition is still your bedrock. How you eat is going to determine how you feel, and how you feel and the energy you have is going to determine how well you perform. So you're looking at nutrition, and what normally happens with people as they get older is lean muscle tissue tends to decrease just with age. So you want to have a strength-based training program regardless of what activity you're doing. So if you're trying to climb Kilimanjaro, or you're trying to climb one of the, you know, Everest base camp, or you're trying to climb a good mountain range in Colorado, you want to have a good lean muscle tissue base and strength base, because of bone density, again, which can increase in terms of risk of bone breaks as you get older, your risk of muscle tears because of that decrease in muscle tissue. So you want to have a strength-based program, whether that is, you know, 2-3 times a week lifting weights, deadlifts, squats, bench press, military press, a form of a row or a pull-up if you're able to perform that movement without any issues to your elbows or shoulder joint. That's going to build a nice strength base. It's going to increase your lean muscle tissue, something that will naturally decrease as you get older naturally, but you can minimize that greatly. It's going to reduce your risk of injury, and it gives you this base. And then your nutrition feeds in on top of that. So you need to be consuming a little bit higher protein as you're making these physical training changes. So your amino acids, which are the building blocks, it's what makes up protein. That's what repairs you from these workouts. Most athletes know they should bump their protein up. Not every athlete knows why, because you need to have those building blocks, or else you're not actually going to be able to recover from those sessions. And then your risk of injury can go up. Your load has gone up, meaning you're training more, you're moving more, and you're not repairing. So it's the old adage that you're robbing from Peter to pay Paul. You're actually just taking away and not doing what your body needs to repair, and you actually further increase your risk of injury. So sometimes when I have an athlete or an older athlete who's in their late 50s, early 60s, who are like, well, look, I've started the gym, I'm doing strength training, I've listened to a podcast, you said weight train, I'm doing weight training, and then I'll ask about their nutrition. They go, well, I haven't changed that at all. You know, I've kept that the same. And I explained to them, look, your risk of injury can actually go up if you don't fix this. So we look at that. We increase the protein. We normally increase fat as well, dietary fat, because what happens with men in particular, it's women too, but I work mostly with men with my one-to-one, is you're going to have lower testosterone. Each year, each decade that passes, your testosterone levels decrease. So you want to try and optimize your hormonal balance as much as possible. And one of the ways to do that is increasing your dietary fat, increasing avocado, different nut butters, different oils, monounsaturated fat, polyunsaturated to a degree, oily fish. All of that can support your hormonal function. So you've got your training load with your resistance and your strength training. You've got your protein intake from your food to repair. You've got your healthy fats. to optimize hormonal balance. And then you look at your sleep, which is again, something that can decrease. And you probably can speak to this, that every decade that passes, I won't even say decade, I would say half decade, like every 5 years, you'll notice this sharp decrease in quality of sleep. That's really common. So you're going to look at things that are going to help that. And there's different strategies from supplementation to different things like making sure that you're not magnesium deficient, to your CBD oils if you need a help with relaxing your nervous system, all the way up to implementing strategic naps that can work really well. People do this in their 20s in Silicon Valley. People do it in their 60s. And you're going to be able to get, especially if you're timing it, so you're getting those 90-minute REM cycles in a nap period, you can find you get an increase in sleep quality, although you're not getting your 8 hours in one go per se. And what can happen with people in their 60s is you sometimes have the gift of time, meaning that you've got either you're retired or semi-retired, or you've got proficient at whatever work you do. Your kids are normally older. You might be playing with grandkids, but you don't have the same time commitment that you did when they were your kids. So you have this gift of time, which means that you're able to prioritize things that will support your body that you weren't able to do 3 decades ago. Yes, you might have been fitter. It might have been easier to recover. It might have been easier to do a whole host of things when you were in your 30s. But remember, your 30s, you might have had kids and they were probably young. You were climbing the career path, which is quite stressful. You were doing, potentially if you were single, you were going out and having nights out and all of these things that rob your time, rob your energy. So there's pros and cons. And sometimes I find my men who are in their late 50s and 60s sometimes need a bit of a perspective shift because they think it's all negative. And then when I start bringing up some of the positives, they go, actually, I do have more time. I actually do have more finances. I actually can hire experts in this area and I can prioritize a 90-minute nap during the day because I want to be able to train tomorrow or go on that hike tomorrow. So a shift in perspective on top of the practical things that I've mentioned there can all potentially help any athlete that's 55, 60 plus and so on.
That's great. I got to take that to heart. I often will speak of aging as a entirely negative thing. And so it's good to be reminded that, you know, there's some positives in there too. So thanks for that. So let's talk a little more about this, how to raise my game a bit. Going to Costco, that's not an adventure.
Well, I don't know. The first time you go, it's pretty adventurous. My first Costco experience was something else. I do remember that.
Okay. Fair enough. And I'm not trying to put judgment on anybody because adventure's in the eye of the beholder for sure. You know, you whatever excites you, whatever is a challenge for you from wherever you are, that's what I mean by an adventure. And so where you are, you had spoken about that. And so, you know, for people who maybe have never done anything, they've maybe got a long way to go before they can do Mount Kilimanjaro. And yeah, maybe Costco, a trip to Costco is a workout.
There's things in between Costco and Kilimanjaro for sure.
That's good. Places where you can get some better photographs. But still, everybody here, even, you know, more of the wise athletes who they are exercising and they're doing things and, you know, they're starting with a base. The idea would be to up your game, maybe not even keep it up, but just give yourself a goal that's challenging so that that gives you memories as well as some physical benefit from it. But just like a professional athlete is trying to peak for an important event, they don't try to stay peaked for the, you know, the rest of their lives. That, you know, that's impossible. Their system's going to crash on them. So, you know, you want to keep raising your base and then you peak for your event and then you come back off the other side and you let your body recover and repair itself. Anyway, so this would be the same sort of a thing here. So in this effort of raising your game, especially for the older athlete who maybe isn't recovering as well, despite some of the advantages in time and money and access to experts, still, if they do a little too much too fast, as you said, and they get this injury, that can be a chronic thing. And now that's going to detract from the quality of the experience, maybe even interfere with it, stop it from happening. The thing that I wanted to get into is this, how do you know if you're doing a little too much too fast? I mean, sometimes I'm in the gym and I'll, you know, I'll be lifting something and I'll be like, oh, that felt weird. Not good. That didn't feel like I pulled something and I've injured myself, but it felt different. Like the next time I push, I wonder what's going to happen, right? You know, I think we call it a niggle or something like that. What sort of a mindset should people have that you tell your clients about where when they're trying to up their game and they're pushing on the edge, because that's where the improvements come from, how do they make sure that they don't injure themselves?
Another great one. And the analogy that comes to mind straight away is if you're driving your car down the highway and you feel like the tire's flat, you don't keep driving it until the entire tire bursts out in you and you crash the car into the side of the wall. Mm. Your body is very similar. And the beautiful thing about our body, in most cases, not in every injury, but in the case and example of niggles, is they're like warning signals in your car. Your body will send you a warning sign in the shape or form or feeling as of a niggle. And one of the great things about older athletes that I find compared to, and I've worked with a lot of younger athletes as well, 25, 26 year olds tend to push through. They tend to have this, oh, just run it off. And before they've known it, they've made an injury that was a 2 out of 10, a 5 out of 10, and now it's an 8 out of 10, and they're out for 3 months. Mm. Older athletes tend to have a, okay, I need to back off a small bit. They've just, again, it's just wisdom. You know, wise athletes, wisdom comes with age, and you tend to check in and go, well, that's a niggle. I should probably stop that now. So you have two choices if you're in the gym. If it's in your shoulder, you switch to something lower body, or you take a break and you call it a day, and you take one step back for two steps forwards, and you give it a break, see how it feels in a couple of days, see if you need a professional, a physiotherapist, a masseuse, or somebody to look at it. The main thing and how you approach it, two scenarios. One is your training program. If you're working with a professional, whether that's me, another coach, online, offline, in your gym, someone that lives near you that's a professional, that individual is an expert in program design. Meaning that all other things equal, you shouldn't be progressing at a rate that your risk of injury goes up, even when you're raising your game, because there's a systematic way to design programs and progressively overload programs, like you mentioned, where you're peaking for a specific time period that might be over the space of weeks, months, maybe a year, but you're gradually building it up. Now, there's freak accidents, people can get injured, you're not warmed up, it was too cold, you lifted a weight that was a little bit too heavy, and then you course correct. That's the second scenario. You talk to your professional and go, look, I actually tweaked my shoulder, I tweaked my knee, or I tweaked my Achilles, and they'll regressively pull back on certain movements and exercises and see how your body feels. That's the advantage of working with a professional. When you're doing it yourself, which I think a lot of older athletes can, you need to basically pull the reins on yourself and go, right, I've tweaked my knee here, I'm in the gym, my plan is to do a hike in 3 weeks. That's going to be quite challenging. I get them to ask the question, how can I win? It's in my second book, Rewire Your Mindset. How can I win? W-I-N. What's important now? So when you get an injury or a niggle, you ask the question, what's important now? What's the next thing I need to do that's going to support me of my goal of that hike in 3 weeks? And in a lot of cases, a niggle would be you stop training. You stop doing what you're doing, you give it a day or two rest, you see if it goes away, because a niggle can be just a little bit of a warning sign that you didn't warm up properly, you lifted a weight that was too heavy, or your body can't perform that movement because of a history or a chronic injury that's underlying and now it's having a secondary impact when you try and perform that movement. Very common. If you have a long history of cycling, they're the athletes that I've worked with who have normally chronic lower back issues because you're hunched over on a bike for hours on end. They're people I do a lot of corrective exercises when it comes to the form of deadlifts, rows, to pull their body back into an alignment so their risk of injury decreases. Those athletes will go in and then pick up a weight to do a curl or do a press and their lower back will go. It wasn't the curl or the press that was the problem. It was the 5-10 years spent curled over on a bike. But you didn't know that going in. So you need to be mindful that your history and what you've done coming into a sport or coming into or your past sport coming into a new goal such as a hike all play a role here, and you listen to your body and you take that scale back. You ask what's important now. You say, right, I'm going to take this day off, I'll see how it feels in 2 days. That niggle might go away, and then you make an adjustment for your next training session and you're still on track for that hike in 3 weeks. Or it doesn't get better and you go and see a physiotherapist or a massage therapist or a professional to diagnose what's potentially gone wrong or do some deep work on releasing the tightness around that particular injury. Or if it's just increasingly inflamed, do you need to back off training for a week again so you can make your hike in 3 weeks? So there's a lot that goes into that. A professional helps, working with an expert helps, but a lot of people can do this themselves with their own check-in.
Okay, great. You said a few things. One was warm-up, which did not occur to me, but yes, warm-up. And I have found over the years that, of course, I never believed in warm-ups for a long time, but then discovered that the longer the warm-up I did, the better I performed. And so I want to hear a bit about the importance of warm-ups and even extend that maybe even into this business of chronic injuries or old scar tissue or whatever it is that it seems to be a weak spot in the body of a, you know, an older athlete who has maybe overdone something, cycling in the lower back, whatever. And maybe one of the ideas would be to, you know, how every morning kind of work that stuff out and get a warm up, you know, first thing in the morning so that you don't bend over to pick up your shoe and your back is out, you know, because it wasn't ready for something as silly as that. And then we talked about the workout itself, but then post-workout, what do you do? Are we talking about icing your knees or are we talking about getting in a sauna, you know, cold or hot, or sitting on a heating pad, or some red light therapy, or, you know, things like that? Anyway, back to you.
I'll start with the warm-up before the workout. Warm-ups are a very peculiar area of debate amongst fellow fitness professionals and certified strength and conditioning coaches, because some are very similar to your old style of thinking, that they're like, warm-ups are a complete waste of time. Others think everybody should be doing them. And then there's the argument of whether you should be doing warm-ups in the sense of warming your body up physically in a core temperature sense, or dynamically stretching, which is where you're moving and stretching, or static stretching, where you're stretching statically by just sitting down and touching your toes. What I've found over the last 15 years of working with different individuals all across age spectrums is the one, there's individual requirement for warm-up depending on starting point. If you have a previous injury, you tend to find that even psychologically you feel better by warming up that muscle group in particular. If you have a lower back issue, just warming your body up psychologically makes you feel better. But what I tend to see is athletes that are older require longer warm-up times, which makes a lot of sense. Your blood flow is not as good as it was when you were 16 years old. Like, you can be 16 and you can go play a basketball game, a pickup soccer game, and you don't need to warm up at all. You can just rock up and go straight into it. There's elasticity in your muscles that decreases as we get older. So warming them up is really important. And that can be anywhere from, you know, a 5, 10 to a 30-minute warm-up. And normally what I would say is your warm-up is based on the activity level that you're looking to do. So if you're going to do a lower body weight session, for example, you're going to warm up your legs, and that's going to be a bike for 5-10 minutes, get your core temperature up. That might be some dynamic stretches through your hamstrings or quads, or some static stretches when the muscle is warm. Never stretch a cold muscle is a good rule of thumb. And then maybe some light warm-up sets. So back when you were in your 20s and you went into the gym, you might just do a warm-up set and go straight into your squats. Now you might have to do 3-4 sets where you're gradually increasing the weight, getting your body used to the progressive increase in volume or load when it comes to the weights that are on the bar. And that's okay. There's an individual testing to see what works best for you on that. So I'm a fan of warm-ups. I think anybody over the age of 40, not even getting into 50 and 60, should definitely be considering warming their body up. Again, mileage varies. If you're living in California or the middle of the Sahara, you don't have to worry about warming up as much because you walk outside and it's 40 degrees already. So it's different depending on where you are in the world. So you're already kind of pre-warmed going in. Then you might just do some stretches, progressively overload the weight, as I said, building up with 5 pounds, 10 pounds, 15 pounds, and then into your working sets on squats. That's how you would approach it. For those who are coming out of bed and are worried about what feel like random injuries, and something that is important to understand is no injury is random unless it's a contact-based injury, which can be. So somebody runs into you, you crash your bike into somebody else, they're contact-based injuries. A muscle tweak or twinge is very rarely random. It's kind of like if you picture a load of dynamite and it was always there, and then just somebody lit the match and the spark and the whole thing went up. That's kind of how those niggle injuries are. It was ready to go and you just happened to bend down to tie your shoe and your lower back went. That's where your prevention over cure mindset comes in. So things that keep you flexible, things that keep you warm and keep your muscles, elastic isn't the correct terminology, but flexible is something people generally use. So using exercise like your calisthenics, your bodyweight exercises, yoga, Pilates, the very unsexy style of exercises are incredible for prevention of injury. And it's very difficult sometimes as an athlete who has a cycling background, a running background, a sports background, who's used to pushing their body physically, either over long periods of time or intense periods of time. If you're a basketball player, ex-rugby player, ex-American footballer, where you're used to sprint-based sports, it's hard to do things like yoga and Pilates because they, one, they're difficult, but they're a different type of difficult. They're a not normal type of difficult, but you're doing it so that you have longevity in the sport that you really care about. You're not going to get injured when you go to tie down your shoe. You're basically removing the fireworks from the analogy earlier, bit by bit. So that prevention approach tends to work really well for athletes. And I can't remember what the third one was, Joe. I think it was warm up, and then there was a third one in there and I've forgotten what it was.
Yeah, it's the cool down.
Oh, cool down. Yeah, so cool downs, I think it depends again on the exercise choice. If you're in the gym doing weight bearing exercise, your squats, your deadlifts, etc., you're going to have some element of cool down built into that. If you're doing a hike or a distance run, your core temperature is going to be higher gradually because you're building up at a steadier pace. Your body responds differently. Like the going in and lifting 5 heavy reps of a deadlift is different than hiking for an hour. Completely different energy system, different stress on the body. So you'll find when you're doing heavy weight bearing exercises, that strength training, you're probably going to have a warm up excessively, you're going to have your main workout, you're going to have a cool down. If you're on a hike or a longer cycle, because it's a different type of energy system, you're more aerobic than anaerobic, your body's not going to need that same priority on a cool down because it's naturally going to happen because the pace is kind of steady and it stays there. So I would worry less about it if you're in that more endurance style of training.
Another angle to this that I'm interested in your thoughts on is less about the temperature. I said cool down, and maybe that was a bit of a red herring. What I mean is like post-workout.
Oh, yes.
I'm trying to get the
ice bath, sauna.
Yeah. I'm trying to get the recovery.
Yes, I'm back on track with you now. Apologies, I forgot that. There we go. I'm back with you now. We're on the same wavelength.
Okay.
Yes, so it depends. They serve different purposes. I like to take a little bit of an intuitive approach. Like you ask 99 people or 100 people, nearly all of them are going to say, I prefer sauna over ice. It's nicer. Heat is nicer than cold generally, but they serve different benefits. What cold exposure does, whether that's an ice bath, a cold shower, cryotherapy, is it's analgesic for one, which means that if you have like a lower back issue and a tightness, it serves to reduce your interpretation of the pain level of that injury. That's why a lot of physiotherapists recommend it. For years, we thought as sports scientists that it was reduction in inflammation. And it definitely has some element of reduction in inflammation through the, you know, the cytokines, etc. But it's mostly that it's an analgesic effect, meaning that you don't feel as sore. And that's really beneficial. When you feel sore, you feel tight, you feel a niggle, you feel less sore when you do ice. It's way harder. You do 2, 3, 4 minutes in an ice bath. It's quite difficult. It's hard, but there's a lot of benefit to it. Also, it can increase what's called BAT, your brown adipose tissue. So if you're an individual that's older, that this tends to decrease massively with age as well, your brown adipose tissue helps you actually reduce body fat in your body. So again, it can increase lipolysis, help you tap into fat for fuel, and it'll burn it as that brown adipose tissue. So there's a lot of side and secondary benefits to cold exposure. Heat, such as sauna, hot tub, jacuzzi, works really well also, but in a different way. What heat does is it makes your, again, similar coming back to the elastic feeling, the flexibility feeling, it makes you feel looser. And getting into a sauna after can increase, or getting into something that's heat exposure after training can make you feel looser. And if you think of it like an accordion that's been folded up, when you loosen that up, it's a lot easier to move it, and it's not as tight and rigid. And your body is very similar. If you're training and working out in whatever capacity that is, your body's going to tighten up to some degree. That's what happens with it, particularly if it's weight-bearing exercise, whether that's weight training or even eccentric load like cycling. Like there's low eccentric load. It's why you're not as sore, because it's less eccentric load. Whereas if you're going to a squat, you're tearing more muscle fibers, and that's why it's way sore than going on a long bike ride generally in terms of muscle recovery. But what the heat does is it makes you feel looser. So you come out and you feel like, oh, I can stretch, and you're able to twist out your neck. You're able to move your hip a little bit further than you were before you went in. So that can serve a lot of benefit too. And what you should do really comes down to your individual preference. Both. There's a style of therapy called contrast therapy where you mix both. Where you do ice, heat, and the idea is that it's increasing blood flow, which again can really serve individuals who are older, because you get a decrease in blood flow as you age. So that contrast therapy can support and hijack a natural physiological slowdown that happens with age, so that you're able to have a blood flow that felt like it felt when you were 30 or 35, but you actually have to do something external to get that now in your, you know, late 50s, early 60s. So the different modalities and recovery protocols have different benefits. It's very much a case of, what do you enjoy? What can you stick to? What do you have access to? And then which one are you getting the most benefit from based on your individual sport, your individual adventure prep based on what you're looking to do, and then kind of doubling down on it. Again, I like heat, I like cold. They're the two obvious ones. There's lots of different ways to explore that. And then the contrast is the combination between both.
That sounds great. And it's funny, I hadn't heard the pain relief.
Analgesic effect.
Yeah. That it's almost a psychological benefit. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've used ice on my knees, you know, off and on for years, and loved it, and then got away from it, and then went back to it. And I'll say that it rings true. What you're saying rings true, and even in my personal experience, I think that the ice does feel better, and my knees feel younger, right? They don't feel as painful quicker. But I don't think I'm healing as fast as I did if I used heat instead to improve the blood flow. Because I think that the healing is coming from the what's in the blood, right? I'm carrying away damages, and I'm bringing in stem cells, and I'm, you know, it's oxygen and food and all the everything the cells need are in the blood. And so, you know, if you're cutting off the blood flow by icing it, well, you know, it probably is not a good long-term thing, but it might make you feel better. There's some value in that for sure. Mm-hmm. And so that contrast idea, you know, makes really great sense. And also on the flip side, when I've used heat after a workout, it always makes my knees, let's just use my knees as an example, they always feel worse with the heat, but then the next day they feel great. So it rings true what you're saying. So I'm going to make sure that I emphasize that more. The other thing is that when we're talking about picking these adventures, and I want to get into, in the little bit of time we have left, how to pick adventures. When we get into them, having time, having a week to train, that's probably not the way to do it. Having the ability to have patience to figure out what's going to be good for you, right? You're saying, oh, it's individual. You got to see what works, what kind of a warm up, what kind of a cool down, what kind of a, you know. Yeah, it takes time, right? That's the idea. So have time. Don't feel under pressure to get yourself fitter as fast as possible, because that's where you're going to end up with the problem is going to happen. You're going to injure yourself and you're done. I mean, you might injure yourself so bad doing some kind of a squat or a deadlift, you're done forever. Mm-hmm. You're never going to get right again. So make sure you build in the capacity to have patience. And then there's some psychological aspect to the patience as well. And so that's getting back to this, you're saying sort of doing some stuff in the morning to make yourself feel better with these chronic injuries or you know, tightness that has accrued over time, maybe even just while you were sleeping. I have found, and weigh on in this if you have something to add, but I have found that I do like a little mobility routine in the morning, and I did it just sort of out of, I don't know, discipline. Everyone said I should do it, and so I did it. And it always felt terrible, and it never seemed to do me any good. And it was just aggravating to me that I was never any better from doing it. But after about 4 years of doing it, suddenly one day I realized, you know what? I'm not as painful anymore when I'm doing this. It took 4 years.
Yeah. That's what's common. If what's interesting there is your language. You said, I'm not any better, but the reason you do mobility is so that you don't get worse, not so you get better. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Great point. Great point. Okay. We've told people how they can get better if they had a goal. Well, how can they pick this goal? I think there's a few ideas, you know, like getting out of your comfort zone. You know, my personal thing is that I always would pick something that felt a little too much, not a lot too much, but, you know, I always felt disappointed when whatever thing I picked to do just was too easy. And it was like, man, you know, I didn't even barely broke a sweat doing that. So I wanted it to be hard. And so what I would do is I would pick something that felt hard with a sort of an optimistic assessment of my willingness to suffer for it. Because it was optimistic, it probably was false. And that near the end, I was done. I was ready for it to be over. I had done all that I really wanted to do. And that little extra bit of suffering, which I did not enjoy, but once it was over, that made all the difference. That really was where the powerful memory and the pleasure in myself came from. What do you think?
I love that. And it brings us full circle that the emotional response and difficulty and suffering is what imprints the memory. So if you don't challenge yourself and you do something that, one, you know you can do, and two, you don't really have to raise your game or step up to do, you're going to have, and probably unlikely to have, any sort of emotional imprint on that, and you're just going to forget it. Like when you've been in the gym and you've done this over the last 5 years, there's workouts in there where you're doing them going, oh my God, this is horrible. This is so difficult. But then it's over and it's done. And 2 weeks later, you forgot that workout was so difficult because it was within your capacity. I love what you said there, and I choose similar goals and recommend people do the same, of choosing something that's within your capacity, just outside what you think you can do, but not too far. Because if you go too far, it's actually unexecutable and you're not going to be able to do it. If it is within your capacity and within your comfort zone, you're not going to have any benefit to achieving it. So you're looking for that kind of in between those two things. My metric for that is just off two questions. I normally ask, well, what makes you jump out of bed in terms of excitement? Like, what would you love to do in terms of, oh my God, I would love to climb that mountain. I would love to do that race. I would love to experience that challenge. Mixed with, what would you regret on your 97-year-old deathbed? What would you be thinking? Okay, this is my last day on earth. I really wish I did that. I really wish I climbed that mountain. I really wish I did that race. I really wish I tried to push my body in that event and I didn't. And you use some psychological forward projection. You put yourself into that position and ask, well, what would my 97-year-old regret more? And you combine that with what makes you excited and jump out of bed, because every individual challenge, like, it's all relative. A half marathon is the biggest thing anyone will ever do in their life, and they'll be so proud of themselves until the day they die. Somebody else will have to run 200 miles to get that same feeling, and everything in between. So you want to figure out what your individual excitement is in terms of what you love to do. And if you normally, a check-in on that is, you hear about something, or as soon as I say, look, what's something you'd love to do that you didn't think you could do? People have an idea that comes to mind. For me, it was, you know, the Sahara. I was like, oh my God, I'd love to do that. And then I was like, oh, I don't know if I can do that. And that was my feedback to go and do it. And sometimes it's just getting out of your own way, knowing that it's not necessarily the goal that's the problem. It's the timeline in which you give it. Most goals, particularly physical achievements, are possible for most people outside of things like, I'm not going to play in the NBA. I'm 5'8". I'm built like a little hobbit. I'm in my late 30s. I'm not going to be playing the NBA ever. Like, it's just a hard no. But there's endurance and hikes and adventures and challenges that I could, but it might take me 2 years to train for it. But it's not the goal that's the problem. It's the timeline that needs to be adjusted. And that's the case with a lot of athletes and older athletes that I've seen. Yes, you might have been able to do that in 6 months of training 30 years ago, and it might take you 2 years now, But all other things equal, and if you're healthy and well, the time's going to pass anyways. So you may as well try and do it and set yourself up to hit that goal.
That's great. And another dimension to this, I would say the people who I have the closest relationships with, aside from my family, are people who I met on my adventures. And then, you know, we hit it off for whatever reason, and we kept adventuring together. And so these are people, I just heard from one of them like 2 days ago, just out of the blue, haven't seen him in 20 years. But as soon as I got a text from my buddy Pete, I was like, oh, Pete, you know, who I've been to Ecuador with, and I climbed in the Tetons with, and he lives in Las Vegas. And when I was living in Chicago, I'd go fly to Vegas for $99 and rock climb, you know, all winter long. I still have powerful memories about Pete and how great Pete is. And so the socialness of adventuring, I think, is a dimension that people shouldn't discount. What's your experience?
Oh, literally echoed. You could replace Pete with my friend Simon and I would have the exact same feeling, response, and attitude. And you meet great people. Like, something we joke about is that when you're athletes and you're similar to me, and I think a lot of people listening will be similar to both of us, like, we don't self-identify as normal people. We're a little bit weird. We're a little bit out there. We like to push ourselves physically, and that's okay. We have a weirdness and a frequency that's different from everyone else that you meet 80% of the time in your everyday life, and that's okay. But there's other people out there who have the exact same weirdness and frequency to you. And when you put yourself in a position to challenge yourself, with whether it's an event, whether it's rock climbing, whether it's just doing cool things like this, you meet other people like that who become friends for life. And they might be friends you talk to every day. They might be someone you talk to twice a year, but you get that, oh, amazing Pete messaged, or I get, oh, amazing Simon messaged. What are we going to do this year? Like, Simon messaged me like twice a year and going, what are we going to do this year? Like, what's the challenge this year? He ran through the Sahara with me. He ran through the Arctic with me. We attempted to run up the Tian Shan in Kyrgyzstan last year. Like, and every couple of months, he'll go, cool, what's the plan for this year? and I just love it. It lights me up every time he messages. And I'm so grateful I have a friend like that in my life. And I have several others who I met during these events who I will be doing things with, assuming we're both here and we're all here, over the next 3 decades, 4 decades. Yeah. And sometimes that alone, from the social element, one, it makes you feel less weird, 100%. You just go through the world feeling happier, going, yeah, there's other people out there with the same frequency as me. This is awesome. Yeah. And it means that you get to experience these cool things and ideas that you might not have thought of because they actually came up with the idea. And they're like, let's go do this. And you're like, yes, let's do that. And then sometimes the roles get flipped. You find something and they come with you and everybody wins.
Oh, that is so awesome. That is so awesome. You got to find your people. I mean, if you're a fitness person, you're already a weird person, you know, compared to most people in the world. So you got to find your people. If you pick a great adventure, you'll find people just like you. And I think that the key is that it doesn't have to be somebody that's your next door neighbor who you're going to see every single day of your life. These will be people you have great experiences with, memories with. And they'll be your best friends, even if you don't hardly ever see them. But when you talk to them, it makes your life better. So that's great. You get friendship. You mark time with powerful memories. Your life feels full. You give yourself goals so that you can motivate yourself to train and up your game over time. I mean, what could be better? This is great. This has just sort of been us having a beer.
Yeah, which I love, by the way. Yeah, absolutely love. Yeah.
Me too. And they rarely are like that. This has been much more enjoyable for me. Tell our audience how they can find more information about you and the things that you've done, your books, that sort of thing.
Oh, thank you so much again for having me on. This was a blast. As like, again, feels like two guys just having a beer, chatting, and just shooting the breeze, which I love. For anyone that wants to check me out, briankeyfitness.com is where all the information is for my coaching. My books are available on Amazon, everywhere books are found. The Fitness Mindset, Rewire Your Mindset, The Keen Edge, and social media. Instagram is probably the place I spend the most time, but definitely the podcast is my baby. The website has all the resources, and then the books for anyone that wants to check them out.
Fantastic. I'll get all that stuff in the show notes. And by the way, I listen to your podcast all the time. I love it. Although nobody should have their children listening. there's a lot of foul language.
I know. But,
that's how I talk in private anyway.
My daughter, every time I do it, because she listens to the podcast on occasion, she's like, "Dad, stop swearing." I'm like, "Oh, I was like, sorry. I was like, I didn't think you'd be listening."
Yeah, it doesn't bother me because that's how I talk. But anyway, I just thought I'd warn people. But I'll put your podcast link in the show notes as well.
Amazing. Thanks so much.
All right, Brian. Hey, enjoy Kilimanjaro. Good luck on that. I'm sure that it'll be a blast. All right, man. Have a great one. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. You too.
All righty. Okay, bye-bye. Thank you so much for joining my conversation with Brian Keene. You can find more information about Brian in the show notes. And it was Helen Keller who said, "Life is either a daring adventure or nothing at all." She was so right.